Imagine being thrust from paradise into a world of war, rape, disease, and natural disaster, yet being told repeatedly that all is for the best in this best of all possible worlds. This is the journey of Candide, the naive protagonist of Voltaire's masterpiece. Published anonymously in 1759 and promptly banned across Europe, this slim volume became an underground sensation that continues to captivate readers nearly three centuries later. Why does this tale of a sheltered young man's brutal awakening still resonate? Perhaps because Voltaire masterfully blends laugh-out-loud satire with profound questions about suffering and meaning. Through Candide's increasingly bewildered eyes, we confront the gap between comforting philosophical theories and the harsh realities of human existence, a gap that feels just as relevant today as it did in the Enlightenment era. In Westphalia's idyllic province stands barren Thunder Ten Trunks Castle, where young Candide embraces Dr. Pangloss's philosophy that this is the best of all possible worlds, where everything has purpose. In Pangloss's reasoning, a parody of Leibniz, noses exist for spectacles, legs for stockings, and even disasters serve some greater good. This paradise collapses when Candide innocently kisses the baron's daughter Cunegonde's hand. Caught in this forbidden act, he is literally kicked out of Eden, expelled into a harsh world that repeatedly challenges his mentor's teachings. Candide quickly tastes the world's cruelty. Tricked into joining the Bulgarian army, he attempts to exercise free will by taking a walk, only to be captured as a deserter and brutally lashed until the king's arbitrary clemency saves him. The subsequent battle scene showcases Voltaire's satirical compression. Trumpets and cannon create a hellish harmony, while 30,000 perish. In burned villages, Candide witnesses wounded old men, women with slit throats, and children clinging to their murdered mothers. Through his protagonist's eyes, we see the stark disconnect between philosophical abstractions and human suffering. Not part of some cosmic plan, but simply the result of human cruelty and power politics. Reunited with his disfigured teacher Pangloss in Holland, Candide learns that Cunegonde was allegedly killed by Bulgarian soldiers who destroyed her family's castle. Despite suffering from syphilis, Pangloss maintains his optimism, claiming the disease serves the greater good by connecting to Columbus's voyage that brought chocolate to Europe. Their philosophical discussions are interrupted by the devastating 1755 Lisbon earthquake that killed 30,000 people and shook Europe's faith in divine providence. While Candide lies injured, Pangloss refuses practical help, preferring to theorize about underground sulfur connections. Portuguese authorities respond by organizing an auto-da-fé, believing public executions will prevent further earthquakes. Candide is flogged for listening to Pangloss's heretical optimism while Pangloss is hanged. Ironically, another earthquake strikes that same day. Bloodied and trembling, Candide questions, "If this is the best of all possible worlds, what are the others like?" At his lowest point, an old woman mysteriously leads Candide to Cunegonde, alive. She has become the shared property of Don Issachar, a wealthy Jewish banker, and the Grand Inquisitor who presided over Pangloss's execution. When both men discover Candide with Cunegonde, our gentle hero becomes a double murderer in minutes, killing both men in self-defense. The old woman who rescued Candide reveals her extraordinary history. Born to a pope, raised in splendor until captured by pirates, she witnessed her mother's murder, nearly died of plague, was repeatedly sold across North Africa, and had one buttock cut off to feed starving soldiers. Despite frequent thoughts of suicide, she clung to life, an absurd instinct shared by many suffering souls. Her account provides a female perspective highlighting sexual violence and objectification, experiences absent from male philosophical discussions of evil. Despite everything, the old woman maintains practical wisdom that contrasts with Pangloss's abstract theorizing. after escaping South American cannibals, Candide and his valet Cacambo discover El Dorado, a hidden utopian kingdom where gold and jewels are worthless pebbles. In this rational society, science flourishes, religion exists without persecution, and the king is wise and humble. El Dorado represents a genuinely good society achieved through rational human organization, revealing that Voltaire isn't merely cynical, but can envision a better world. Despite finding paradise in El Dorado, Candide grows restless after a month. Motivated by love for Cunegonde and the prospect of wealth in Europe, he leaves with El Dorado's pebbles. This reveals a key insight. We measure happiness not by absolute well-being, but by comparison with others. Perfect contentment without distinction appeals less than relative advantage in an imperfect world. After losing most treasures, Candide selects a companion most disgusted with life, a scholar named Martin who believes the world is abandoned to evil. Their philosophical debates form the intellectual core of the novel's second half. When Candide points to human kindness as evidence of goodness, Martin dismisses such examples as rare exceptions. When a pirate who robbed Candide sinks with stolen gains, Candide sees divine justice, while Martin notes innocent passengers also died. In their most revealing exchange about mankind's cruelty, Martin compares humans to hawks who have always eaten pigeons, suggesting human nature remains unchanged despite Candide's protests about free will. This naturalistic view challenges both religious and philosophical optimism by suggesting evil is inherent in creation itself. Through Candide and Martin's dialogues, Voltaire shows that abstract systems, whether optimistic or pessimistic, fail to capture human experience. Neither Pangloss nor Martin can adequately explain a world containing both extraordinary cruelty and unexpected kindness. The novel concludes with all major characters reuniting in Constantinople. Candide finds Cunegonde has become horribly ugly working as a dishwasher, while Pangloss, having survived hanging, still maintains his optimism despite everything. The group settles on a small farm where life proves far from idyllic. Seeking wisdom, they consult a dervish who dismisses their questions about evil, telling them to hold your tongue. They later meet a simple Turkish farmer who avoids three great evils, boredom, vice, and want, by cultivating 20 acres with his children. This modest example inspires the novel's famous conclusion, "We must cultivate our garden." This deceptively simple phrase contains the essence of Voltaire's practical philosophy. After exploring the inadequacies of both optimism and pessimism, he suggests that meaningful life comes through productive engagement with the world rather than abstract theorizing. When Pangloss attempts one final philosophical explanation, Candide simply repeats, "We must cultivate our garden." The power of this conclusion lies in its modesty. Voltaire offers neither utopian solutions nor religious consolation, just the dignity of meaningful work and human connection in a flawed world. The garden requires constant maintenance and remains vulnerable, yet within these limitations, we create meaning through our efforts. In a world still plagued by ideological extremism, Candide's message remains essential. Practical compassion and constructive action matter more than philosophical systems. We must cultivate our garden, not just for ourselves, but for all who share this imperfect world, recognizing that small, sustained efforts toward improvement ultimately outweigh grand theories about why things are as they are.